Hello, and welcome to this edition of The Letter Lords with me, Bob Fleming from Proctor Who.
And me, Jim Cameron from the Crinoid podcast.
And on this episode, we are talking about issue 510 of Doctor Who magazine, April 2017. And if you've not heard us before, what we do is we try and read the letters from the Galaxy Forum in the magazine. Sometimes there isn't many letters, so we just make it up as we go along. But there's one or two this time, Jim, isn't there?
Yeah, it's quite a decent crop this time, I think. And with any luck, we should have this episode out before issue 511 comes out.
Yeah, we'll cross fingers.
Yeah, we're on the wire on that one, but because we do it monthly and they come out every 4 weeks, eventually there's a little blip where we have to do two in a month, which is what we're doing this time.
Exactly.
Anyway, enough of the drawing back the curtain and seeing how we operate.
That was Letter Lords Confidential for you.
Fascinating, I'm sure.
An insight into our world. Apologies, listeners.
Okay, well, should we get started then, Bob?
Let's kick on.
Right, well, of course, at this stage, people have got the news that Capaldi is leaving.
Is he?
Perhaps you hadn't heard, Bob, but because of the inevitable lag of a print publication, you know, people are starting to write about him leaving. Yeah, and everyone's kind of sorry to see him go, I think, and many people think it's the right time, though. And time for a clean sweep with Chris Chibnall. I think we're pretty much in agreement with that, aren't we, Bob?
Yeah, definitely. Love Capaldi. He's been absolutely brilliant. But I think with a new showrunner, a new Doctor is always required.
I think it works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Just to give a total refresh to the series.
Yeah.
But still, sorry to see him go. I'm glad for all he's done. And glad for the sort of ambassador role he's had for the show, which is, you know, at least as good as anybody else and perhaps better.
Absolutely, and he loves it, and same for Moffat for me as well. He has been brilliant for the show. He's not been perfect, but he's done it for a long time. He's never going to get it right every week, but majority of the time he's been absolutely brilliant as a Capaldi. So yeah, he will be missed, but it's time for a change.
It is time for a change, and several people have nominated their choices for a new Doctor. So perhaps if I run them by you, Bob, we can see what we make of them.
Yeah, because we've sort of gone through, I think, who we thought we'd like to see as Doctor, haven't we, when the news broke a couple of episodes ago. But I'd like to hear, yeah, because I don't know these, so I'm quite excited what you're going to say, what the writers have put into the Galaxy Forum.
Okay, well, let's start with Anthony Green from Sheffield. He suggests Maxine Peake. Do you know Maxine Peake?
No. Don't think
she's
so.
She's a northern actress.
Good lass.
Yeah, you love her already, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
She does comedic and very serious roles as well. I think she was on is it Dinner Ladies, the Victoria Wood thing?
All right, okay.
I think she was on that. She's been in various other things like Room at the Top with Jenna Coleman, actually. But you'd know her face if you saw her. She's on practically everything these days.
Yeah. What do you think of her?
Well, I think she's a very good actress. Yeah. Definitely. What I've just said is she's on everything, so I wondered if she's too busy for a role like this. Yeah, whether it would pigeonhole her too much because, you know, she's played such a wide variety of roles. Mm. I think she would be too busy. I think we'd be lucky to get her.
Fair enough.
So it's a good choice, I think, but not one I think will happen.
Mm. I'll research her after we finish this.
Mm. Well, a couple of suggestions from Phil Johnson from Liverpool, both of whom you all know, I think. The first one, Sacha Dhawan, who played Waris Hussein in Adventure in Space and Time, the Mark Gatiss thing. And also another Mark Gatiss thing, did you ever see the Tractate Midoth?
No.
Which is an M.R. James, you know, Ghost Stories for Christmas type thing they had a few years back.
Right.
He played the lead in that.
Okay.
He's a good actor, I think, a little bit bland. I've never seen him play anything remotely eccentric, which I think... I'm not saying he's not capable of it, I've just never seen him do it.
No.
But I think we've said before, eccentricity is required, I think, for the role. Mm.
I've not seen enough of him to, I think, like you probably, to comment whether he'd be good or not, you know. He was okay in the eventually Time and Space, but yeah, cool.
Yeah, I mean, on the face of it, he would be more of a sort of Peter Davison-style Doctor, I think.
Yeah.
But, you know, after someone as sort of cranky and eccentric as Peter Capaldi, that wouldn't necessarily be unsuccessful.
No.
you know, as doctors swerve from one sort of character to another, don't they?
Yeah.
Another one you'll know very well, Phil Johnson. His second choice is Russell Tovey, who was midshipman Alonzo Frame in Voyage of the Dam, and it was one of the key characters of Being Human, and he's on tons of stuff.
And he was touted at the time because he was so good,
yeah,
that everyone thought he would make a great Doctor Who. Yeah, I could see it actually, because I mean I've thought about it before, just from, like I say, when people were saying he'd be a great Doctor Who, and he would be possibly. He's got quite an alien quality, I think, to his features. He's a great actor. He's probably the right age now, a bit older. I could see him having quite a nice vulnerability as well.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I could see him being Doctor Who, yeah.
Yeah, I could see him being a bit slightly Troughton-y, maybe.
I think even sort of more vulnerable than that. I think it would be, I don't know. Yeah, quite like the sort of Davison vulnerability, but with the eccentricity of sort of Troughton or McCoy.
Yeah, or a splash of Matt Smith, maybe.
Well, I think he'd be very different to that. I think he would, but you know, in my mind, I could see him as being a fresh Doctor, really.
Yeah.
Which is always a good thing. Yeah, he'd be a good shout.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, I think. Graham Knight via email. I don't know where he comes from, other than the Planet email. He is, again, he suggested two people. The first being Stephen Mangan, who many people will know as a similar role, really. He was TV's first Dirk Gently, wasn't he? Did you ever see...
Yes, I did. Yeah, that's a fair shout. Yeah.
He's got a bit of the Tom Baker look about him, hasn't he?
Very much
with,
so.
With the hair and the teeth. He's quite quirky. He's a very funny man, actually. He's very funny on Twitter, for instance.
I could definitely see him being the Doctor, without a doubt.
Yeah.
That's a good shout. That is a good shout.
Yeah, that could be interesting, I think. The second one, I don't know at all. That's Papa Essiadu, who is more of a stage actor, I think. He's a black British guy. I don't know his work. I can't really comment on that. But Graham Knight thinks he'd be a good shout.
Well, Patrick Stewart, for example, he wasn't bad when he turned his hand to TV and film, was he? After being a stage actor for so long.
Yeah, that's right. Make it so, number one.
Yeah, exactly. And and Siri McKellen as well. You know, they didn't do too bad.
Yeah, they seem to have moved into the sort of fantasy sci-fi genre without much trouble, didn't they?
Very well, yeah.
Okay, James Whitby from Wales has suggested Richard Madden, who was most famously, I guess, Robb Stark from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, too. He was good in Game of Thrones. Too pretty. Do you know what I mean? He's like, I know they're probably going for that kind of, you know, good looking. Whereas when you go through the Doctors, right? I'm talking from sort of a female perspective, because obviously there's that sort of fancy element, isn't there, nowadays?
Yeah.
Chris Drexler, I know girls that did, or women that fancied him for his sort of rugged roughness.
Yeah.
Tennant women just adored him in general. But he's not a stereotypical, you know, good-looking, handsome man, is he?
No, he's more sort of geeky. Isn't he?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And Matt Smith is, you know, he's an acquired taste, because he does look very, he's got a very alien quality to his features. But, yeah. You know, a lot of women find him repulsive, a lot of women did fancy him. And Capaldi, hot as they come. The silver fox. But yeah, I think he'd be a bit too, I know it's really bad, isn't it, but a bit too handsome for Doctor Who. I don't know.
Yeah, he's almost too much like a standard leading man, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think that the Doctor's not that. You know, I could see him being a very strong companion, you know, the sort of dashing sort of a hero. Because I think that always works well in Doctor Who. You know, the Doctor having a dashing hero by his side, like Harry Sullivan or Jamie or John, you know, Captain Jack and things like that. But no, maybe not the Doctor. Although I do really like him, and he's ace in Game of Thrones.
He is, yeah. I mean, he's a little bit one note in Game of Thrones, isn't he? I don't know what his range is like. I think he's a fairly successful actor, so I guess he has got range. But again, it's one of those things I probably don't know enough about him to judge. But he used to go out with Jenna Coleman, didn't he, of course?
Did he? Of course he did.
Yeah.
Of course he did. Handsome man.
Yeah, but as you say, perhaps not the Doctor, but maybe you could see him as a companion to a sort of an older or more vulnerable Doctor, or a female Doctor even.
Yeah.
Perhaps see him in that role there.
I think so.
Okay, the final nomination from the readers in this month's DWM, Andrea Egbury from Barnsley.
Mm-hmm.
Not a zillion miles away from you, is it? I mean, of course, I don't know anything about the North.
Exactly. It's miles away.
A perishing cockney.
It's virtually down south, Jim.
Anyway, she has nominated someone who has become a professional cockney. That is Philip Glenister.
Am I thinking of the brother or the one that's in Ashes to Ashes?
The one in Ashes to Ashes. Robert Glenister was Saladin in Caves Under Zani. It's his brother.
Oh, right, yeah. I have seen him, but I don't think I've seen him in anything for a while off the top of my head. But it'd be a fair shout, actually. He's a fantastic actor.
He's Phil great, Glenister. Yeah.
I always get him and his brother confused. Because when he said Phil Glenister, I immediately thought of his brother going around shouting and being sexist. And, you know, that kind of stuff, because that's his sort of his best character, isn't it, in Ashes to Ashes.
Yeah, was it Gene Hunt,
yeah. Brilliant character. Yeah. But yeah. And he's a great actor. He doesn't just do that kind of thing. But that's who I thought you meant.
It is him. It is the one who plays Gene Hunt.
Phil. Yeah. And his brother's Robert.
His brother's Robert, who's Saladin.
Right, total confusion then for me. I guess let's turn that on its head. Right, when you said his brother, I could see that. Because he has quite a weird quality to him. He'd be a great baddie, actually.
He would, yeah.
Phil Glenister, I don't know.
Not so much, I think.
I've seen him do other stuff. Like, I mean, he's a great actor.
Yeah.
And it'd be a good shout, because he doesn't just play Gene, he plays other stuff, because he's an actor in that.
They have to do that, don't they? They have to play different people.
I don't know. I don't think... I like him, but maybe not for me. I think out of your list there, out of the list from here, Russell Tovey and the dude out of Dirt Gently.
Stephen Mangan,
yeah. They're with my two out of that list that I'd vote for, but they still wouldn't beat Paul McGann and Sean Pertwee, so there we go.
Okay, yeah, well, I think I agree with you on those two. In terms of the latest favourites with the turf accountants of this world, Chris Marshall, we talked about already. Mm-hmm. He still seems to be front runner, and I think we've said we could do worse than that.
Yeah, I think it'd be good.
Another one has popped up, which has got me thinking, and that is Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who I know from a comedy called Crashing and a sort of, I don't know what you call Fleabag, but it's sort of comedy, tragedy, pathos,
right,
all sorts, and she's incredible in it.
Mm.
Her range is astounding, and she's very quirky and interesting. You watch Broadchurch, don't you?
Yes.
She was Abby Thompson in
several
episodes of Series 2.
Yes.
I haven't watched any Broadchurch because I've got the first series spoiled for me, so I've never bothered.
It's really good, like it. I mean, it's awesome. But yeah, that's possibly could see that. And again, you know, I struggle with a female doctor, but, you know, I've become a lot more open to it since our conversations, Jim. And yeah, I could kind of see that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, she's very quirky. I mean, she's got a kind of a Tom Bakery quality to her in a way, if you can imagine it in a sort of...
Horrible teeth and a perm?
Well, she's got nice teeth, but they're fairly prominent. I know that she could have her hair permed if that would help you, Bob.
She must have a perm. Does anyone still get perms apart from old women? I don't know. I've not seen a perm for ages.
I think they went, didn't they?
I always wanted a perm. I never got one, though.
I think at one point, the entirety of Liverpool Football Club had perms.
I wanted a perm by a ginger head. I wanted to look like Michael Knight. But it never happened, Jim. I never got a perm.
Did you have a talking grifter to ride around on?
Yeah, it did. I did, actually, yeah. And it proper talked to me in that.
You had conversations with the other voices in your head.
Don't psychoanalyze me, Jim. you don't want to go down that road. We nearly touched
There's a rabbit hole. Yeah, we don't want to be going down.
Touched on that darkness last week.
we did, didn't we?
But yeah, I think there's some good shouts there, but there'd be, I think we agree with our sort of two, but I don't think they, like I say, they replaced the ones I would have had anyway. But yeah, it's interesting. I like hearing people's thoughts on, you know, different actors that get to play, you know, the new Doctor, because, you know, especially when I would never have thought of them as well.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Again, I would never have thought of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but now the more I think about it, the more I think it could work.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Of course, it's in the hands of Chris Chibnall, and who knows what he's thinking.
Exactly. And it's not for a while yet, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's get this. The danger is that it obscures people's thoughts about the coming series, isn't it?
That's all I care about right now.
Yeah, well, it's one of the downsides of announcing the departure of a doctor, you know, over a year before it happens. You know, it takes everybody's eye off the ball for his final series. I don't think it's fair for the actor or for the show. Really.
We'll soon forget about it, Jim, when it kicks on Doctor Who.
That's right.
And we're deep in reviewing it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, great stuff. Looking forward to that.
Right, next letter.
Next letter, yes. Speaking of doctors, do you want to talk about John Hurt?
Yeah, well, it's this issue of Doctor Who magazine is, you know, there's a big bit about John Hurt in, and rightly so. You know, John Hurt, the actor and the man, absolute one of the best actors of all time, without a shadow of a doubt.
Oh, definitely.
And one of the nicest human beings on the planet. Such a clever man. Great heart, great spirit, just a top man. But I'll read one of the letters. There's quite a few, obviously, in tribute to him. One from Libby Nicole from Dundee. The world of Doctor Who has lost yet another. Sir John Hurt did the impossible, and he really did as well, actually. He nailed the part of the Doctor in less than 75 minutes, thanks to everyone who made the fab decision to cast John as the War Doctor. And that, I could not agree with that anymore.
Yeah.
Because that was a massive thing. I mean, I remember when at the end of that Matt Smith adventure, I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head, and it left us, didn't it, for up till Christmas, you know, introducing John Hurt as the War Doctor. I was screaming in my chair.
Yes, that's right.
Did not understand what was going on. And I think if they'd have cast anyone else, it would not have worked. It would have been awful. Because it was such a tough idea. You know, you could have got... Ideally, you would have got Chris Eccleston. That would be their plan, wouldn't it? Or if it was me, I'd have gone for Paul McGann, which I'd have loved, obviously. But to do that, like Libby says, in 75 minutes, make the Doctor that you've never seen, he's got no history, he's got nothing.
Yeah.
And you believe he's the Doctor and all that. It was, and that's testament to the man. Not the story, not the script, you know, obviously that does play a part, but he's just so good, so good. And I'm really pleased he was up for doing the Big Finish stuff as well. I'm not, you know, I do listen to Big Finish. I'm not the biggest Big Finish fan because it does lose me a bit, but a lot of audio and spoken word does. But oh my God, what a guy! And yeah, a welcome addition to Doctor Who, and a welcome addition to being one of the Doctors as well. I would do welcoming as a Doctor, and you know, he's in my, you know, list of Doctors really.
Yeah, I think so. There's probably very few actors that could have stepped into that role and been accepted like that because it was such a difficult concept, really.
Mm.
But, you know, if you're kind of in 2 minds about the concept, someone of the caliber John Hurt is in there playing it, you know, suddenly it's a lot.
Well, I think we've mentioned the two other people it could have been, in Patrick Stewart and Sarah McKellen. You know, it's people like that. That's the school of actor we're looking at right now. With, you know, John Hurt's with them guys, you know.
Yeah, it's that sort of level, yeah. I'm at quite the lucky position of having several of my favourite actors becoming the Doctor. I was a big fan of Peter Davison in All Creatures Great and Small, and he became the Doctor. I was a great fan of Paul McGann in various things with Nell and I. And
my favourite film, without a doubt.
Certainly top three for me.
Yeah.
And Monocled Mutineer, did you ever see that?
I've not seen Mutineer, no.
Monocled Mutineer, he was excellent in that. So he was one of my favourite actors when he was cast. I loved Christopher Eccleston in Cracker, and then he was cast.
Yeah.
And then I've loved John Hurt, well, for as long as I can remember, then he was cast.
Mm.
My favourite ever book is George Orwell's 1984, and the definitive film version of that has John Hurt playing Winston Smith.
Right.
And Richard Burton playing O'Brien. So that is just fantastic for me, two of my favourite actors in there.
Yeah.
Another great performance of him is John Stroke, Joseph Merrick, The Elephant Man. Again, hard to tell it's John Hurt, but it's a brilliant portrayal anyway.
Not seen it.
Oh, you should see it. Mm. Yeah, it's an amazing film, really. And a lesser known role, I guess, is he plays Max, one of the prisoners in Midnight Express. You know, about the film about the guy in the Turkish prison.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely phenomenal in that as well. And he's one of those actors that just assumes the role, you know, he embodies it. So you can think of those as being several different people.
Yeah.
But it's John Hurt playing them all.
Yeah.
He's an amazing actor.
I mean, in the Day of the Doctor, like, he was, it was so good. You could kind of, I even saw it in David Tennant and Matt Smith's eyes. Mm. They were like, right, we have to up our game because there's two of us against this, the one, you know, god of acting pretty much.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and I think they even said themselves, it was an absolute masterclass, I think, for everyone in how to do it. And he was just so awesome, like, with everyone.
Well, he's such a generous actor, apparently. No one's got a bad word to say about him. He's, you know, he, you know, helps the very young actors along, and, you know, he's got time for everybody, and he never plays the sort of the diva, whatever the male equivalent of a diva is. He never does that, or never did, sadly. Of course, he's gone. But, yeah, just appears to be just an absolute top bloke and one of the very best actors, you know, this country or any country has ever produced.
Absolutely. And the idea of the War Doctor, I adore that, because it's one of the things that I can never get my head around, was that what the Doctor killing everybody.
Yeah.
And that was a really clever twist on it as a bit of an, not an out, because that's the wrong word, maybe, but, you know, how it would have happened.
Yeah.
And he still had the heart of the Doctor, but he was so battle-torn and scarred. And that's what he really portrayed so well. And the relief at the end, where they come and, you know, help him and it's all good and they sort it out properly. What a great ending that was to a Doctor Who anyway.
Incredible, yeah.
But again, you saw it just everything was pitched just perfect, and it was, you were just there going, I get it now, I get it now. Oh my God, I feel really sorry for him. You know, like he's having to do all this, go through all this because it's so desperate. The Time War was that bad. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it would be kind of cool to see, I don't know if it's CGI or whatever, but you saw, not John Hurt, but the War Doctor as a young, you know, sort of a, when it wasn't like full on image, but you saw him as a kind of a young man when he regenerated from Paul McGann into the War Doctor.
Yeah, it's a reflection of something, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's scope there somewhere for like a War Doctor. You know, they do this class and all that rubbish. You know, a War Doctor spin-off would be pretty cool because it could be action-packed, you know, that kind of stuff, which I know Doctor Who is, but a bit more like the Doctor with a gun. Do you know what I mean? A bit more like what Americans would think of, like American Doctor Who. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And presumably that would fulfil that agreement they have where they have to keep including Daleks all the time. You know, perhaps it wouldn't have been the bloody show every time.
Massive Dalek walk would be cool, wouldn't it? It'd be pretty good.
Take them out of the main show and confine them to that. But
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the BBC doesn't have a budget for that kind of thing, but we can dream, can't we?
Yeah, but America does.
America does, yes. Mm. Indeed. They could cast a John Hurt alike.
Yeah.
A younger actor, couldn't they? Well, get over there. Get on the blower. Talk to your people in the States.
Talk to my friends.
Let's talk twerky already.
So I've got a pitch for you. Sit down. I've got a coffee.
Pop, pop, pop.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's awesome. You know, he's definitely a part of the world of Doctor Who and always will be. And definitely a Doctor. He definitely is one of the Doctors.
He's very keen to have that confirmed, wasn't he, by the production team?
Well, he is.
Because does make me one of the Doctors, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. Because Capaldi's 13, isn't he, really? If we look at it.
Well, let's not get into the numbering, Bob. But yeah. I mean, I'd prefer to think of him stepping out of the numbering and just being the War Doctor. Otherwise, it just gets too complicated.
Doctor 8.5.
Yeah, well, nobody numbers the Doctors except for, you know,
virgins.
Die Hard.
You're calling me one of the virgins, Jim.
I'm not. I think you just admitted that.
Yeah, I did. I'm a virgin, Jim.
Well, I'm glad you found
I've been playing a rock and roll band since I was 13, Jim. I'm a virgin.
I'm glad you found this a safe place enough to come out with that, Bob.
I'm full of admissions on the letter laws, aren't I?
You are, yeah.
But yeah, John Hurt, thank you very much for your contribution to Doctor Who and life and film in general.
Yes, thank you, John, and may you rest in peace.
Yeah, man. Not too peacefully, though, because you're a top chap and I think you like a bit of the old hell raising, so I hope you're enjoying yourself up there too.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right, let's move on then. Letter from Mick Lewis via the email about 70s nostalgia. Terence Dix. Every time I read his name, I just get a little shudder of it. Awesome excitement, happiness. I love Terence Dix, by the way.
Yeah, oh, so do I.
Even. I'm going to do it in shall I do it in Terence Dix's voice?
Oh, go on. Enjoy yourself.
Terence Dix, even if the whole mag had been dedicated to his interview, this is terrible, isn't it? I'm just going to read it normally. Terence Dix, even if the whole mag had been dedicated to his interview, I would still have wanted more. Mr. Who, indeed. Now, if only we could get him to write another script for the series. I could not agree more, Mick. I think about it all the time, every working hour. When's Terence Dix going to write for the new series of Doctor Who? When they said they were going to get a classic writer back, immediately I just wanted Terence Dix. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't disappointed with Ronan Munro because I reckon it'll be brilliant. But Terence Dix is the master of the narrative and the plot and everything he writes is brilliant and understandable, not simple as in stupid. It has heart, it has action, it has everything. For me, he's the best, like Bob Holmes, Terence Dix, Stephen Moffat, best writers on Doctor Who ever.
Praise indeed, yeah.
Top three writers of Doctor Who, and I couldn't put them in order.
Yeah, and I think you could say he's top two script editors with Robert Holmes, I guess.
Terence Dix.
Just a tremendous asset to the show when he was in it, and you know, obviously done work since. Yeah, most notably, he kind of popped back to do the Five Doctors, didn't he? Which is an almost impossible writer's task.
And it worked. Yeah. It's brilliant. It works so well. And then he got a Doctor Tom Baker drop on him. He's like, oh my god, but not a problem for Terence. Just did it. Did a great job of it. Perfect, Terence Dix. His Target novelizations are the best written material for me to understandable. Creates the great imagination in your mind, you know, to what's going on in the situation. Brilliant descriptions. He's just so good. I can't. Yeah. He's the best writer ever in the world. There you go. I love Terence Dix.
Yeah. Well, you should have said.
Oh, because he's not got long left this mortal coil, has he? So come on, Doctor Who. Please, can we have a Terence Dix script?
Yeah, I'd love to see what he would make of it. I mean, no doubt ideas have been bobbing around his head ever since he left. Ironically, he might need a little bit of script editing to fit the current style, but then he's such an adaptable,
he's a brilliant writer. It'd be absolutely fine.
If he's given a brief of what the current house style is, he will be able to write to it because that was his, you know, essentially his job for many of the shows he worked on. So
exactly.
Yeah, he could do it. In fact, perhaps more than most other of the older writers, he would find it easier to adapt, I think, than most. And I'd love to see what he would make of it. So, yes, please, Terence, we'd love to hear from you.
Without a doubt.
Okay, well, we've got one final letter to read out, and it's kind of a bridge to the next topic we want to address, which is a little bit contentious. So, hold on.
I've just heard about it, Jim, which is always ace, so I hope you've got your bleep button ready.
Bob will be in hot take mode in a minute. But let me read this letter. It's Louise Thacker, again, via email. She's 20. Thank you for dedicating a whole issue to one of my favourite eras of the show. I wasn't born until 1996, and so I only came across the Third Doctor's era when I was in my teenage years. It gave me such hope and taught me about compassion and justice. Well, on the subject of compassion and justice, we've had a bit of news this week about the Pearl Mackie character Bill Potts, who will be joining in the first episode of what is only a couple of weeks away now.
It is, yeah. Very excited, Jim.
Yeah. Series 10 of Doctor Who. A separate announcement on this is that her character is going to be a lesbian.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Glass of water for Bob Fleming. And at some point, we'll see her partner or girlfriend or whatever she is called, Heather. Mm. I don't know if you noticed the names there, Bob. Named after Bill and Heather Hartnell.
Yeah. That's cool. That's nice.
It's a nice tribute. I've no idea what Bill Hartnell would have made of it.
Well, let's not get down that road, but yeah.
A mixed-race lesbian character named after him. Might not be top of his list.
Bless it. It's a lovely tribute. It's like the Sid and Verity thing, isn't it?
Yes, it's very similar, yeah.
That's going to do me now. Tell me what it's called, Jim. The David Tennant one, where he's the Human Nature.
Human Nature.
Family of Blood, yeah. Yeah. Right, okay, so that's absolutely fine. When you told me, I was like, yeah, whatever. I wasn't gay, straight, black, white, whatever. I don't care. But apparently there's a furore going on.
Well, let me lead you through this furore.
Please do, Jim. Please do.
Yeah, as I say, this appeared to be a separate announcement for this. And people are saying, well, you know, aren't you making too big a deal about this? There's two schools of thought here. I mean, A, it shouldn't be a big deal in this day and age that we have a gay character in a popular show. But at the same token, it is a big deal for, you know, there's lots of LGBT Who fans, and this is a piece of representation for those fans. And I know a lot of them think it is a big deal. So
LBG, what's it? LB what?
LGBT, lesbian, gay, bi, trans.
Ah, right, okay. I kind of get that, you know, in a positive manner. And I'm sure, you know, I mean, I can hear Craig right now talking about it, who is on Proctor Who with us, who you may or may not know, is a homosexual man. He would love this because he loves stuff like In Class. You know, he loves, yeah, obviously gay being promoted in a very positive way, and, you know, gay young people particularly,
yeah,
being promoted in a positive way, and Doctor Who or Doctor Who related shows doing that, or shows in general doing that. I thought you were going down the road of it's a big thing and Doctor Who fans are complaining about it.
Well, I'll get to that.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, you know, like I could, Craig will be really happy about it. Mm. Completely understand that, because it's such a good thing that young people are being represented, you know, gay young people are being represented in, like you say, major TV productions. Because it's not taboo anymore. We're not in 1970 or 1960. It's neither, you know, for me personally, whatever. Great.
Yeah.
Gay, straight. I'm not bothered. I'm not gay. But equally, if the companion was straight, as I'm straight, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? But I suppose there's been a lot of representation of straight people on television for many, many years, and you don't get it so much, you know, with the gay community. You know, good, because if it's, you know, a good thing for the
LGBT.
Yeah, them. They're awesome. And like I say, I know Craig will be very, very happy about it. So,
yeah,
great.
Representation is very important. I mean, you're going to, for instance, if you, young girls, for instance, you know, being represented by, you know, having female superheroes and stuff like that. I mean, I took my daughter to the Lego Batman movie and she was delighted to see a few sort of female characters in there, you know, superhero characters and, you know, the Ghostbusters and all that kind of stuff. All the man babies lost their shit over female Ghostbusters, but, you know, tough.
I really enjoyed female Ghostbusters. It was quite a lot of fun, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I was never a fan of the other Ghostbusters particularly, but, you know, I'll see it at some point.
It was a bit of daft, you know, and that's what it was when it came out, you know. Anyway, right, make me angry, Jim.
Well, let's just carry on with this announcement a bit.
Okay, sorry.
You know, people are saying, kind of, why is it an announcement separately for this? I've got a couple of theories on it.
Okay.
Both of which may or may not be true. The first one is BBC is notoriously leaky. Yeah, everything gets leaked, as we see, on a practically weekly basis.
Yeah.
Now, wondering if they're trying to get that news out before, you know, a less sympathetic tabloid gets hold of it and makes merry with it. You know,
which they probably would do. You know what I mean?
Well, they kind of have in a way, because the Daily Mail readership.
Yeah, was going to say Daily Mail straight away or the Sun. Yeah. Absolute fucking shit paper.
Yes.
Papers.
Yeah, but I mean, at least, I mean, the BBC got the announcement out. The Daily Mail obviously kind of used that announcement, and their readers are frothing up about.
Of course they are, because they're all fucking assholes and fucking retarded morons.
See another one. So, yeah, I mean, you would prefer the BBC to get it out before someone like that got hold of it and broke the news.
Scum of the earth, Jim. Scum of the earth. If anyone reads the Daily Mail, listen to this podcast, stop listening, you retarded twat.
I feel much the same. But, yeah, I'm slightly more relaxed about my...
honestly, I can't... That paper, that's the Sun and the Daily Mail, if you read them, just f*** off. Anyway... Hi, Jim. I'm back in the room.
The bleep is exhausted already. Anyway, and the other thing is, and it's, I think it's perhaps more to do with the fans in a way, is that I wonder if they wanted to get this issue out into the open before the broadcast so people can, you know, do their ranting and seething and perhaps calm down before the, you know, it's broadcast and the drama starts unfolding and it doesn't get in the way of all of that.
Pathetic.
It is pathetic, and the fan reaction has been very disappointing in some corners.
You're joking.
Yeah, I mean, despite, and we said before on this show, haven't we, despite this programme that we love and we've grown up with, it espouses these values of acceptance and inclusivity, yes, egalitarianism, all that stuff. I mean, the Doctor's forever freeing oppressed people.
Mm.
And it's all about, you know, treating aliens as your equal unless they, you know, they're evil. I mean, one of the interesting things I think that Chris Eccleston said was that he was delighted to play a character that was so... accepting of all these other life forms.
Embracing, that's what he is. And if you, like you say, if you're a cockhead, he'll kick your head in. Do you know what I mean? Well, he won't, obviously. He'll.
But Alpha Centauri.
But, you know, if you're evil or wrong or, you know, you're bad, you know, your moral indicator isn't functioning the way it should do, you know, he'll get you. Mm.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how many colour you are, how many arms and legs you've got, or anything else.
If you're a gaseous being, you don't have a body. You can be a consciousness. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Yeah. But if you're evil, then you know you're probably reading the Daily Mail of the Sun.
All those gaseous beings reading the Mail of the Sun. I wish I'd stop. Anyway, well, one of the criticisms, you know, well. Unbelievably, people are saying, oh, why didn't they make her, you know, disabled as well and tick every box?
Oh, my God.
It's just pathetic. But one of the things that I've seen a number of people saying is, this has already been done. Well,
what do you mean?
Straight companions have been done.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with these people?
It's like, oh, we've had a gay person. We don't need any more, do we?
Oh, this is real. This is people who say this stuff.
This is people who claim to be Who fans. I mean, that is treating like a gay character as a plot device rather than a character like everyone else in the cast.
It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It's fabulous, like I say, for people, you know, for gay people, because it's a representation for them, which they don't get a lot of.
Mm.
Particularly in stuff like, you know, Doctor Who, even though Doctor Who's been brilliant, you know, from that point of view, from embracing not just gay people, but, you know, all types of people.
Mm.
I mean, God, Doctor Who's been made predominantly by minority people. It was made by a woman who was a producer in the 1960s. The first Doctor was directed by Warwick Hussein. It was an Indian man in the 60s.
A gay Indian man.
A gay Indian man in the 60s. You know, so many gay people and people have, you know, minorities have contributed so much to Doctor Who because of their creativity and brilliance. Russell T. Davies brought Doctor Who back. For God's sake, it doesn't matter. White straight people have written for the show. It doesn't matter. All that matters is it's brilliant. And that's it. And ticking boxes, it's not ticking boxes. It's Jesus Christ, I'm not off on Twitter, Jim, because I'll get banned. If it's on Twitter, these people say
this is Facebook. I've seen most of it.
Facebook? Oh, my God.
Doctor Who groups on Facebook. You know, you think, I kind of naively think that Who fans should know better than this, but you know, they continually disappoint.
Star Trek fans wouldn't do this. Just saying.
Really? Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, because Star Trek's, you know... I don't know. I'm just trying to piss off Doctor Who fans who have been saying this kind of thing. Because it's ridiculous. Honestly, yeah... I'm a bit angry, Jim.
I was very angry when this all came out. One thing I will say, though, is that, you know, it's a terrific thing to have this lesbian companion. My heart sinks slightly when I think Stephen Moffat is writing for her, predominantly. I'm not sure I trust him to write her well. He's not the most sensitive writer in this sort of area. Mm. I mean, if you look at Vasta and Jenny, Mark Gatiss, obviously a gay man, wrote Vasta and Jenny as a kind of loving couple, didn't he, in the Crimson Horror, and it just seemed like a realistic
it was
portrayal,
as much
as you can have with a lizard and a human.
But Moffat... A bit more tongue-in-cheek on it, a bit more like innuendo and...
Yeah, I mean, he gets all sort of sniggery... schoolboy about it, doesn't it? I mean, there's that notorious cunnilingus gag, isn't there? I can't remember. It's series six somewhere.
Yeah.
And then there's that scene where, you know, Vastra basically objectifies Jenny during that painting scene, do you remember, in Deep Breath? Mm. I mean, it all seems to be a sort of a middle-aged straight bloke's fantasy version of what a lesbian couple would be like.
I suppose.
I mean, he's just a bit crass, isn't he? Do you remember that crass remark he made about bisexuals?
No.
Yeah, they probably don't watch my shows because they're too busy having sex all the time. As if, you know, because you're bisexual, you must have more sex than anyone else.
I think fortunately, he's one of his best mate, but his great friend is Mark Gatiss, who I'm sure will guide him maybe through how to write. He's not a bad writer, but I know what you mean.
He's a good writer. He's just a little bit tricky. Another thing I can just mention while we're on this subject is, you know, he's been accused of sexism in the past, Stephen Moffat.
Right, okay.
His reaction to that seems to be to have female characters telling men they're rubbish all the time. Have you noticed that? It happens several times over the last couple of series. I mean, that's trying too hard for me. I mean, can't we just have neither men nor women slagging the other gender off? I mean, it's just...
Well, I mean,
it sounds like somebody's trying too hard to prove he's not sexist. He just needs to relax and just treat these characters as human beings. Not Vasta, obviously, but, you know, treat them just as people. and stop making a big deal out of their differences, and you know, talk more about what brings them together.
Are you looking a bit too deep into that, Jim? Because I mean, don't get me wrong, RTD, he wrote masterpieces in personal dialogue. He could write people so well. Yes, some of his plotting was a bit crazy, and I know Moffat scripts don't lend to that as well. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of see what you're saying. I'm not saying 100% agree with it.
Fair enough.
But I think, yeah, if you could give him just a drop of RTD for when he's writing personal scenes,
yeah,
he'd be pretty much perfect, I think. You know, not far off. That's one thing he does lack in. Overcomplication of plots. Because I think a lot of his complicated plots work very well, but sometimes he gets a bit up his own arse, I think, you know, which is detriment to the show and the story itself. But I don't know. I see what you mean. I'll probably 60% agree with you.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's a good enough writer that he can just sort of put a cap on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Then I'm sure he can make it work. But I'm just saying his track record is not particularly good in this area.
Yeah.
But, you know, people grow all the time, don't they? Maybe he'll do something a bit more acceptable here.
He'll have to, because it's been part-time characters when that was the case.
Yeah.
I think with this, you know, and also you've got Matt Lucas on board in the TARDIS. Now, I know his character may or may not be gay or whatever, but he is obviously gay. And I think that'll lend to, you know, to it as well. I'd like to know that Matt Gaetz is... I mean, them two work together a lot, obviously, on Sherlock and stuff, and I think they chat in general a lot about Doctor Who. I think it's a sounding board as well, so...
Yeah, maybe Moffat will run stuff by him.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll give him scripts as well. He'll have a look through and, you know what I mean, and go, well, nah, that's not right. You know what I mean? I don't know. We'll see, man. But yeah, I kind of half-ish agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to write him off before it starts. I'm just saying, you know...
It's track rock up.
This is a good thing. Yeah, this is a good thing, but it has to be treated sensitively.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping he can. I mean, you know, you're talking about, like, Stephen Moffat with a smidge of RTD would make a very good Doctor Who showrunner. Well, I think, in a way, that's what we've got with Chris Chibnall.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's why I'm really excited. I mean, Broadchurch, it's... Oh, man, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite... You'd probably say it's quite slow, but it's not...
You know, like, I don't mind slow stuff. I watch 70s stuff all the time.
But I mean, like, so for example, if you watched a normal cop show or, you know, detective show, there's a different plot every week, you know, for the hour episode or whatever it's going to be. Whereas this runs over 8 episodes, whatever it is. So in essence, you'd say that's quite slow. But the way he writes it, the way he does it, the way he paces it, you know, it's nigh on perfect.
It's more like an American approach, the modern American approach.
Exactly.
To
yeah,
serial
yeah.
drama, isn't it? But it sounds
You're never bored. And one thing about Broadchurch, which I don't know how much he has to do with it, the music, if you took the music out of Broadchurch and you just had the dialogue, which is great, it wouldn't add the same intent. So basically, the music, every time they're speaking to a potential suspect, the music makes it feel like it's them. Do you know what I mean? And I'm quite interested to watch it without the music and see if I still had that same feeling. So he may even get a new incidental music person. Murray Gold might be. You never know. He's done it for a long time.
Well, the guy who did the music for Class has done the music for the trailers, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So maybe there is a change in the air there.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a Broadchurch music, but I mean, there could be a change. It's probably about time there was a change. I mean, he's done some fantastic stuff, Murray Gold, but you know, he's done it since the show came back.
Very, very long time.
10th series going up.
Yeah.
And you know, all the specials and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's about time someone else did it, I guess.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, Murray Gold's brilliant, but I think if you're gonna change, let's just go all out. Let's just change the whole shebang.
Yeah, why not? I mean, Stephen Moffat's always saying each series, make it like a new programme.
Yeah.
And when it really will feel, I think, very much like a new programme when Chris Chibnall takes over. And that's a long way away. We've got to Series 10 to get through, which we're looking forward to, aren't we?
Are you excited, Jim?
I am excited, yeah. The closer we get to, the more excited I'm getting. So, yeah, bring it on.
Yeah, me too, man. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're in for a good ride.
I think we are.
In fact, I might do a quick. I'm going to ask you a question while you're on air.
Go on.
Are you going to join us for Proctor Who for the Series 10 retrospective? Oh, well, not retrospective, look ahead at Series 10?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks. Yeah, I received your invitation a couple of days ago, and I'll be delighted to do it. Just make sure I'm available when you record.
Yeah, so hopefully Jim will be joining Prog 2 when we look ahead to Series 10. Sorry for the shameless plug, Rob. But yeah, cool. Is that us then?
I think it is us. Yeah, just a reminder that you can email us at letterlords@mail.com. We haven't had any more emails after...
Not even Jeff?
Wordles on. No, he's done his bit. He's given us an email.
Come on, Jeff. Every month, please.
But luckily we had letters in the magazine and a big new piece of news to talk about. So
Yeah,
we'd love to receive anything from anybody who wants to email us.
Excellent.
Okay.
Right, well, thank you for listening to us ramble yet again. We've been the Letter Lords, and I've been Bob Fleming from Prog 2 Who Podcast.
And I've been Jim Cameron from the Crinoid Podcast, and we hope you'll join us next time.
Bye-bye now.